Heyo, you're listening to Edge Coach Quip, featuring our very own Edge coaches and community dropping knowledge nuggets to fuel your day. Hey everyone, welcome back to Coach Quip. I'm Coach Robin.
I'm Coach Chris.
And today we're talking about measuring success as many ways as possible. This is episode 145. We're almost at 150.
Now you can say it, that's fine.
Yeah, before I was like 132, I was anticipating it, but we're getting really close.
I'm super pumped about this one because I feel like we have mentioned this phrase on the episodes in the past at least half a dozen times.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we'll talk about where it came from too, because we did not make that up. Nope. We stole it. We definitely stole it. So, you know, we're at the time of year, it's June, right? So volumes are climbing, races are happening. It's getting hotter. Things are getting harder, as they should, right? That's kind of the whole idea at this stage in the game. You know, but along with this starts to come not hitting things as handedly as we might have in the winter or the spring. And athletes are getting discouraged at times or bummed. And this episode is all about looking for the nuggets, looking for the wins in unconventional areas of training and racing. Wait, maybe not so unconventional for a coach, but for an athlete. And this is all in the quest to ultimately become a better athlete. This is not, you all know me, I am not an eternal optimist, I'm a realist. This is not rainbows and butterflies and how to make everything okay. It's when things don't go perfectly on paper via the normal metrics that we measure by, what else can we look at? This 100%, again, is not from us. This is from Nike running global head coach, Coach Bennett. It's one of his axioms of measure success in as many ways as possible. And it's really powerful because if things aren't perfect in one way, you can actually look and see what did go well so that you can figure out how you're growing and where to grow. So it is not capital bold, not N-O-T. It is not just the time passed or the distance that you covered, but it's all of the nitty gritty things that we need to consider when we train and race. It's all of those nuggets in between. You know, if you have it oversimplified and those are the only things that you think about are pace and distance, you know, what shows up in Strava and what's publicly facing, it can be super stressful. And the more important thing is it does not paint the picture of where you are as an athlete and how you're progressing.
Well, first, missed opportunity for me to not have my Coach Bennett hat on
today. Oh!
I thought about it. I left it at home. Sorry, YouTube. Two, you know, I love the timing of this one because this, I think, really ties nicely like this power pack of the last three episodes with talking about bad days, the importance of bad days, and then talking about that beginner's mind, and now talking about measuring success in as many ways as possible. What we're doing here is talking about the bottom of our rule of thirds, right?
Yep.
What do we do with those days that are not as good as we want them to be, those days that are tough? And I think between, you know, this episode and the last episode gives us some real clear strategies on how to tackle those and how to approach them in terms of mindset.
Because they're going to happen. You're not avoiding them. And if they don't happen, you're not training hard enough. So when we do tune into these things, when we tune into all the other ways that we can measure success, we actually start to see big picture gains, which help identify our weaknesses, seek out to destroy them, and really become that ultimate athlete that we want to become, but in not such a linear way. So what do these other successes look like? Like, what the heck could we even say that they are? We have come up with an initial list, but just know it can go way beyond this. So these are just some ideas to get you thinking about what else you can look at as a success when it comes to training and racing.
Yeah, first up is nutrition. Is your nutrition game strong? So looking at your, you know, workout that didn't go well or your race that didn't go well, did you nail your nutrition? This is something that I think can be a huge win because this is one that rolls over into all of your future endeavors, the lessons that we learn about nutrition. So if you nailed your nutrition game, that is worthy of celebration. You know, and if it's your daily nutrition or leading up to the race or the session that you nailed, those are all wins.
Yeah, and you gotta take notes. Take notes on them, right? This is why we have athletes write race reports. This is where Training Peaks notes come into play. Take notes when it goes well and you nail it because you can just rinse and repeat and it's magic.
And take notes if it didn't go well because there's a success in knowing what doesn't work too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Because you know that you're not gonna repeat that.
Next up is pacing. How's your pacing game? Is it strong? Did you stick to your progression that you were supposed to do in a race, despite it not being 100% perfect? Maybe, like this recent Chicago 13.1, that was a bit toasty. I had athletes that started where they were supposed to start, but they didn't end quite as fast as they wanted to because it got hot AF. But guess what? That's still a win. You still practice progressive pacing, and you know, you adapted your plan accordingly within that confine. And that's a big deal when you are able to take your pacing and adapt the workout because of conditions or maybe fatigue, you didn't sleep. Those are all ways that we identify growth.
Next up is conquering new or scary bits. So tackling an open water swim, as an example, you know, that overcoming that fear or that question of whether or not you could take something on, huge measures of success.
Goes right back to the prior episode, 144, The Beginner's Mind, right? Mm-hmm. Learning something new, tackling something new, huge lift.
Yeah. So taking on new things or scary things, the things of either distances, speeds, you know, we're measuring outside of that, but pushing yourself in those. So whether or not you hit the distance or whether or not you hit the speed, tackling the effort to get there, you can celebrate that as a success.
I remember, well, I was very scared to ride in clips.
Mm.
And Brian has a background of competitive cycling. And so, you know, he took me out back in my snowsuit in summer in our alley. And we practiced me going, you know, in and out of clips. And of course I fell over. It's just like driving stick. You're going to fall over when you're going slow. You're going to stall when you're going slow. And I was definitely terrified of riding in public. I had this thought that, like, I would be racing and I'd be pushing so hard that my foot would just come out of the clip. Like, this is what I never saw it happen in real life, but this was the fear. And, you know, I rode in the city and rode on the lakefront in clips, and did it very scared, but did it. And I was so psyched the first time I raced in clips because it was so freeing. Of course, the roads were shut down, so there was no stop-go. I was so fast. I was just so much more fluid. And I was like, light bulb of like, I did it! It didn't even matter how I ran off the bike. Yep. I was like, this is why you do it. Got it. Okay, I did the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Other things about conquering new scary bits, I'm just going to give you a spoiler alert. You know, maybe you did a long run with some hill repeats. Let's say they were a quarter or half mile long. That's a spoiler alert for anybody currently enrolled in Edge current fall summer season. Those are big deals, though, because they're, you know, that isn't something that people have done before, and so it's the new thing.
Especially not in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. We got to find the hills. That leads us into the next one of elevation gain. We see a lot of this one with people who are getting more into trail running or maybe training for a hillier course or riding more. Measure and look at that total elevation gain that you have during a session or during the week or even during the month. Training Peaks makes this really easy because you can see the totals at the end. You can also run charts very easily on your end to see, you know, how much you're doing in certain periods. It's going to show you if you're stacking some vert. And if you look and you're like, man, my overall paces were super slow this week, but you did 2,500 more feet than you had in the past, there is a reason, because you are going up and over, not just over. So there's a reason that pace, you can just throw it out the window, and the gain here is the vert.
Next up is tackling heat and cold. So we have talked about Henry, the heat monster.
He is my friend. He is more prevalent now than he will be in September, even though it's hotter in September.
In the transition of seasons.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So tackling that, so we've been inside or running outside in the cold where it's a little bit more comfortable, and then going outside when it is a little bit warmer or more humid can be scary. It can be daunting. But tackling that, regardless of what your paces are, regardless of how far you go, just getting out the door can be a success. So we need to be taking that into consideration. Another thing that we can do is compare our times or our paces to a weather calculator, right?
Like pace calculator, pace calculator.
A heat pace calculator, and see how that stacks up. You know, I think this is one thing if you are like super addicted to your numbers that you can do that, but I think that's not even necessary to see where it sort of lands, you know, unless you are really taking a deep dive on all of your metrics. Just the fact that you got out there and you know that as it gets 10 degrees hotter, right, in 10 degree increments, our pace will slow exponentially. And I know that in the newsletters, sometimes you put out information about that as it gets super hot or super cold. So keeping that in mind, that will be a factor. And sometimes just getting out there, and this can be the scary part too, right? Because sometimes it is scary to take that on, knowing that your paces won't match up.
Next up is rocking your recovery interval. So recovery in a lot of ways. We're talking about usually looking at heart rate in this sense. So check out what is happening in between the work that you're doing. This is where coaches look to see, are you having these positive adaptations or fitness gains? So if I do 400 meter repeats, let's say week one, and my heart rate is dropping 15 beats on a 1 minute interval, and then I look a few weeks later and it's dropping 20 beats, that's a gain. That's a big gain, because we are actually lowering our heart rate during the same amount of time. So again, that requires you to get a little nerdy, but if you're hitting lap, it's going to be pretty easy for you to look at. Or are you able, without data, are you able to jog the recovery intervals instead of walking them? I know with Edge for tempo, you know, when we start the season off, about the first half of the season, we have the tempo recovery intervals at EZAF, which is marathon plus 45 to 90 seconds. When we shift to the second half of the season, we actually make that recovery interval marathon plus 15 to 45, so that it's one tick harder. But guess what? You've made the gains to be able to earn that harder recovery interval effort.
This is such a good one. Like the going by feeling, right? Like the, gauging the difference in your feeling, like, because so many people are tied into their metrics, you can also pull away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like to look at recovering overall heart rate coming from a hard workout, right? So if you get done with the workout and you settle down and you look and, you know, it's taking you, let's say, 30 minutes to come all the way down to your resting heart rate at the end of the day when you get home, that's one thing. If, you know, 7 weeks, 8 weeks into training, it's now taking you 20 minutes, that's another sign of positive adaptation of like, oh, it's working. Okay, great. My heart's actually getting stronger.
Yeah, that's you notice that in the moment, but it's also a big picture thing, because we are looking at the training over time. And I think that so much of our desire for progress or for making gains happens like at that session. Like, why am I not faster today, right? But being able to zoom out, that's a really great way to do it.
Yep.
Next up is cadence. So this is just another metric that's tracked in Training Peaks. Has your cadence improved or optimized over the course of your training? So normally runners will become more efficient over the season, and overall cadence will pick up 3 to 5%.
Over a season, we'll typically see, like, if someone's at, like, let's say 170, they'll go up to like 174 at that same relative pace, assuming that they are building their volume and they're not injured, and that their cadence needed to optimize a little bit.
Got it.
But so we'll typically see a little bit of an uptick.
This is a great sign of gained economy and overall fitness, which means that you can really do more work with less wear and tear on your body.
Yeah. And it's also one that we look at. You know, we had athletes race Chicago 13.1. Again, it was pretty hot. And at the end of the day, even though the numbers might not have been, you know, end time exactly what we wanted, when we looked at cadence, it's like, well, you might have been hurting, but you held your form pretty well, because that's exactly where we wanted you to be. And so that's another way to kind of take away. Next up is mental game. Did you keep your cool? Did you lose your shit? Did you figure out how to channel maybe like anxiety or like getting worked up about something into something positive? So instead of going like inward and dark, were you able to kind of still stay outward and present and be where your feet are and high five the little kid and level up? Those are really, really big gains. As a coach, I would, if I had to choose between a perfect numerical performance and a terrible mental game where you hated it and it was just like, oh, the whole time, and an imperfect numeric performance and you finding your flow and figuring out how to troubleshoot and keep your mental fortitude functioning at a great and growing level, I would always choose the latter.
Same.
And I think that athletes don't think that always. Oh, Lordy. We got an itchy dog. Sorry.
I agree with that. I think that I would definitely, that's probably my number one coaching quality that I would look for in an athlete is somebody who is willing to work on their mental game.
Yeah.
Next up is accelerated recovery. So not being trashed after the race as usual, that is a sign of fitness. A lot of times we see this when athletes don't race their full paces, like due to the conditions, but it's a great way to know that you are literally bouncing back faster than you were before, and that is a huge sign of success.
Yeah, and it also means you can get back to doing more work.
Yeah. It keeps the momentum going, absolutely.
All right, to recap, this is not a rainbows and butterflies episode. This is all about measuring success in as many ways as possible and how it allows us to see the whole picture, not just the pace. And by knowing that, we know what we're doing right, where to work, right? Identify our weaknesses, then seek out to destroy them. And you are ultimately paving the way to the best and strongest version of you yet.
And these are just a few of the ways. So tag us in your ways that you are measuring success, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Coach Quip, original music performed by Mend. Follow us online on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Edge Athlete Lounge. Our podcast lives in the blog section of our website. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and you can check out the show notes for additional ways to contact us. Ready, set, onward we go.